Wake up, sleepyheads. This is CJSF 90.1 FM.
And you're tuning in to Slumber Party. This is CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, community radio from Simon Fraser University. Burnaby is located on the ancestral and stolen homelands of the Halkomelem and Squamish-speaking peoples.
You can listen online at cjsf.ca or on our radio app, which you can download from the app or Google Store, depending on your device. Keep up to date on our social media at linktree/cjsfradio and learn more by visiting our website, cjsf.ca. Welcome, everybody. This is Slumber Party, and I'm DJ Coco.
And I am DJ Star.
Today, we are also joined by a special guest. So, this is Siobhan. So, say hi.
Hi, I'm Siobhan.
That was an order, too.
That was a complete order. But anyways, as per last week, we started going into the Riot Girl genre. And as promised, we are going to dive more into the Vines.
The zines.
Oh my, I said I wouldn't
respond. We had a conversation before this, like, yeah. How do we pronounce it? And that was pretty far.
Okay. the zines and the controversy. And yeah, we're just going to do also a little Canadian Riot Girl band review as well, a little bit, but that'll be for later on. But we're going to start off with a pretty classic Riot Girl band to start with. So, this first one is called Swamp Pussy by Babes in Toyland from their album Spanking Machine. So take a listen.
Attention, women in science, technology, engineering, and math. Whether you're a seasoned professional or just starting on your journey, the Society for Canadian Women in Science and Technology is here to support you every step of the way. From mentorship programs to networking and skill-building events, we've got the tools and resources you need to succeed and thrive in STEM. Visit squist.ca to learn more. That's SCWIST.ca. We can't wait to connect with you.
hair is short. Her legs are brown. Her lips are full. Her head hangs down.
Welcome back. This is CJSF 90.1 FM, and you're tuning into Slumber Party. So the last song you just heard was Blue Angel by Slant 6 from their album Soda Pop Rip Off.
And the song you heard before that was Boot by Tamar Cowley. And she is one of the founders of Sista Girl Riots, which we will talk about later.
And then the one also right before that one was Face Down by Huggy Bear. And so that was some pretty classic 1990s Riot Girl. So as kind of per requested and noted on before.
Requested by who?
I don't know, but we're going to dive more into Riot Girl as a music genre. So just to recap what Riot Girl is. So this is kind of like it's a feminist punk movement that originated in the Pacific Northwest in USA, so specifically Washington, D.C., in the 1990s. So kind of combines politics, feminism, and music. And the name as well, Riot Girl. Girl is supposed to be like a war cry, like a growl, mm-hmm. and riots are strong.
Because it's spelled with three R's, like girl, mm-hmm. girl. And also, they specifically use the word girl to combat, like, it was a very intentional decision because of the patriarchal connotations that are typically associated with the word girl, like being weak, disempowered, not being very autonomous. And as well, it allowed girls in high school and university who didn't necessarily consider themselves to be women yet and just were still girls to fight the oppression as, like, fully fledged activists and feminists, which was, I thought, pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. And so some of more of the songs as well for Riot Girl, they usually criticize things like sexuality and talk about racism, anarchism, misogyny, heteronormativity. But it was more as well for these topics. It was so incredible for Riot Girl as a genre because it was at a point in time in the 1990s when the punk scene, like the punk movement, was very, very known as male dominated and aggressive. So it was pretty revolutionary to see a bunch of young women actually enter into the scene and kind of voice their own opinions and find a place to be comfortable with. And so they kind of banded together to form this Riot Girl kind of subculture that didn't just encompass music, but was also things like the zines as well and style. And it even went, I think, into like skateboard culture as well. But yeah, it was pretty monumental kind of underground movement that moved. But
yeah, especially because there was a lot of sexual harassment and assault as well that was very common at punk venues. A lot of mosh pits, you know, there's like massive guys who are just trying to get their anger out as much as possible, like pushing women to the sidelines. And that kind of made women like, wait, why are we on the sidelines? Like, yeah. We deserve our own thing. But something interesting that the original, like, mainstream punk was pretty oppressive towards women, but then also punk intrinsically has a very, like, do-it-yourself nature, which actually enabled girls and young women to access, like, learning an instrument that isn't associated with femininity, like the violin or, I don't know, the piano or something. So mm-hmm. something that's a bit counterculture in itself, I guess, is punk allowed women to learn how to play like bass or drums or guitar with a pretty open mind, yeah. in that sense.
And having, yeah, punk being such like an angry music type, it was, anger is pretty much associated with masculinity, especially in our cis heteronormative society, which is kind of a big word, but it is true. And yeah, having women go into these like bass guitars and drums and things that normally women are supposed to be more vulnerable and they're supposed to be coming more timid and play instruments like the piano or the violin that are more on the softer side, but having actually embrace being bold and loud was unheard of at the time and kind of grew as a movement. So
yeah, that was like a big key thing with Riot Girl, is that they're claiming these traits of independence, autonomy, being rebellious and assertive that are typically associated with a masculine person or experience, while also like celebrating aspects of girlhood that aren't really shown in the mainstream media a lot.
Yeah, because I feel like a lot of punk music wouldn't really touch into things like misogyny, for example. I don't
Definitely not.
So, or like female sexuality or being like political and talking about having control over your own body and being pro-choice and things like that. So they targeted stuff that was necessary to be mentioned.
Yeah.
But yeah, overall, like, I think it was great that it helped women feel more comfortable in the punk scene, especially how male-dominated it was at the time, because I couldn't even imagine walking into a room full of guys and then having to voice my opinion on something that usually only guys talk about.
Yeah.
And then being respected on that. So,
especially in a world where it's pretty much just based on relationships between men, respecting each other and admiring each other and just building each other's egos up.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a hard place to fit yourself in as like a punk girl.
Yeah.
And something about the social environment at the time in the 90s is that this word post-feminism was very popular, which is pretty much just implying that all of feminism and its goals were pretty much completed and we're living in a world post-feminist, which is, it was not true then, and like definitely not true now either.
Mm-hmm.
So that led to a lot of unhappiness for women who were pretty much silenced by the use of this word. I think that's part of what like led to the Riot Girl movement, is just like, okay, there's still issues that we need to talk about and need to address. We can't just say we live in a post-feminist world when we're still all experiencing these horrible things at the hands of the patriarchy.
Exactly. So. Bringing up the patriarchy word.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, some of the, and then as well to back up, so some of the more prominent bands for Riot Girl, they were usually inspired from the 70s, 80s rock, punk, metal, like encompassing multiple music genre female artists. So two of them, like the Slits, or my personal favorite is Joan Jett and the Blackhearts. But there were some prominent bands, so this included Bikini Kill, La Tigra, Heavens to Betsy, Bratmobile, Luna Chicks. We're gonna play La Tigra song after too, because they're awesome. But
mm-hmm.
Yeah, those were kind of the big bands for it. But as well for Riot Girl, we also talked about how there are zines, and there was a big zine culture as well.
Mm-hmm. There is like a huge history behind zines in general.
Oh, I said it wrong. You didn't even mention.
I tried to give you the side eye.
No, just tell me.
Anyways, so yeah, there is like a huge history of zines in. I think there was even roots in the abolitionist movement for slavery was actually like way back there too. And then building up to it, there was like women's health, sexual health. There was a lot of pamphlets kind of distributed in the way that zines were. But basically it is just a mode of self-expression and creativity
mm-hmm.
for a lot of people. And it's like a way to build community, and they're basically just like pamphlets, just little things that you write poems, you can rant in it, it's kind of like a diary. There's collaging, there's all these different multimedia aspects of it, but it's distributed just like person to person most
of
the time.
It's like the official definition is not official, but it's like a pamphlet like publication. So yeah, it has the text, the images, the artwork, but the idea originated from the 1930s, but gained popularity from the 1950s and 1970s. And then Riot Girl took the elements of that. And so they kind of made their zines. I said it right this time. They took their zines, and it was always characterized with really bright colors. And it had like sketch show drawings and emphasis on kind of more feminist quotes, I'd say. It was like very scratchy letters and bold language. And they're usually, I think they're created by hand, but then they would photocopy them and distribute them.
Mm-hmm. And they're largely used as a tool for like self-representation for groups that aren't really accurately or like accurately represented in the media, or even oppressed in mainstream media or suppressed in some way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like these socially marginalized communities could actually have a voice and mm-hmm. publicate their stuff, so.
And for Riot Girl specifically, like, it's a good space to have as a young woman to be, you know, like a writer, designer, artist, poet, just any kind of form of self-expression that you're motivated by the self-expression and not necessarily the profit. So there is a freedom that comes with that, which you can critique and expose the mainstream, which in this sense a lot of Riot Girls were critiquing the heteronormative patriarchy and capitalism, mm-hmm. and like our hierarchical system of everything. So
yeah. The only not really problem, but kind of an issue, was that these zines were created by primarily the demographic of Riot Girl followers, which was young, urban, middle class, white, young woman. And so the production of these zines, I feel like they'd be pretty time consuming and costly, and especially that most of these were handed out for free. So it kind of barred low income people from participating, and especially of women of color facing intersectionality of being low income themselves, usually more often. And so that's kind of leads into our next discussion of the controversy of Riot Girl, but I think we are going to go into that later. But also, side note, I would really like to make my own zines. I think they're sick, like genuinely sick.
Yeah, they're so cool. We have
our own zine. I keep saying that wrong.
I mean, whatever. At this point, it's just kind of like, you guys know what we're talking about.
But yeah, we have our own zine. I think it was created 2 years ago, but it is awesome. We still have a couple copies, so I like looking at that from time to time. But yeah, definitely going to try to make my own zine at some point. Mm-hmm. I know that DJ Star does some collages, which is kind of similar.
Yeah, I think I could definitely incorporate that.
Yeah, because what's the difference between the collage and
I think collaging can be an aspect of zines, but it can be pretty much whatever you want as long as it fits onto paper in some way.
Right.
So you can like draw, you can take photos and then print it out there, or like do a poem or something.
Okay. So great tip.
Yeah.
Great tip. Okay. Anyways, we are gonna take a break and play some more Riot Girl for you.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be talking about the controversy next in a little bit, so stay tuned for that. But we are gonna start off this time with
We're gonna go into Ode to Bedroom Dancing by Le Tigre, and this is fronted by also one of the main members of Bikini Kill. So Bikini Kill was a big, also a big band that kind of pushed Riot Girl forward. So yeah, it's a good song.
Enjoy.
Time for me to act. Tune in to Intravenous on Wednesdays from 10 to 11 a.m. for music and talk radio about all things, all genders. Discussing and approaching contemporary gender issues through an intersectional feminist lens, our goal is to educate, engage, and challenge the dominant hegemony. Intravenous, every Wednesday morning from 10 to 11, only on CJSF 90.1 FM. Diverse, independent, yours.
Welcome back. This is CJSF 90.1 FM, and you are tuning into Slumber Party. I'm DJ Star.
And I'm DJ Coco. Just going to introduce that last song, because I love it so much. So that one was called Go-Getter by Necking from their album Cut Your Teeth. These guys are pretty special. We've played them before as well, because they played at Studio 6 here at CJSF a couple of years ago. I think it was about 5 years ago, but yeah, it's like a Vancouver... They're labeled as a punk band, but I believe that they are what I'd consider modern Riot Girl, because their lyrics touch on a lot of the same topics that Riot Girl typically encompasses. Mm-hmm. But anyway, great band. Go check out the rest of their album. Boss is pretty good as well. But the next one up you'll be hearing is also pretty good. This one's called Sometimes by Mannequin Pussy, and from their album I Got Heaven. And they played at Sled Island in Alberta, which is this music festival that happened, I think, earlier this year. And the lead singer got interviewed on an open mic here at CJSF as well. So extra promo, but hope you enjoy this one. This is CJSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby Community Radio from Simon Fraser University. You are tuning into Slumber Party, and I'm DJ Coco.
And I'm DJ Star.
We are back from our little break. Just introduced the song already before, but you just heard Sometimes by Mannequin Pussy. Great band, great song. But now we're going to go back into the Riot Girl conversation. So we're going to talk a little bit about, you can say controversy, but...
Or some of the issues, at least, within it, despite it being a great feminist thing that was promoting a lot of autonomy and self-sufficiency for women. It definitely did not do that for all women.
Yeah. And just want to preface before we start, I took a couple notes from this opinion piece from this girl named Emmanuel Muputhi. So thank you for her for me referencing some of her work. She has a great site voicing some of her opinions, so I really like them. So I'm gonna reference a little of those. But
I was reading this woman, Addie Schrode's thesis paper, actually, and it's called The Race Riot Within and Without the Girl One, Ethno-Racial Girl Zine's Tactical Construction of Space.
That's
It was pretty informative, so you guys should honestly check it out and read it.
Mm-hmm.
It is 124 pages, though, so
read 124?
I didn't read all of it yet, but
okay,
it's interesting.
Anyways, just to give super quick rundown, Riot Girl is a type of music genre that encompasses politics, feminism, and music, and kind of empowers women. But it was kind of a genre and a movement that really had an emphasis and dominated by white, urban, middle-class young women. And so this kind of got a bad rep from the media. And so this was kind of where the issues came in because, number one...
Or at least the modern media.
At least, the modern media. But I feel like it's as before, they were labeled as pretty radical. They're misandrists, saying that they hated men, even though they didn't. And saying
this is very typical for raising any kind of issue against what men perpetuate, is just being labeled as, you know, a man hater, when it's really just like, oh,
just like we want
equality. That this happens, actually. Yeah.
Like, we want more women in a male-dominated field, but then that's misandry. So, anyways, this movement was kind of more criticized because it was the fact that it was only relatable for close common experiences for womanhood, but only for white women and the woman who dominated and led this movement. So, for example, not that this is terrible, but a lot of the famous bands, and I feel like the reason why the movement gained so much traction was the forefront of having these white women and using white privilege to gain popularity, such as like La Tigre, Bikini Kill, Bratmobile. They were all white women, and unfortunately, even though they didn't mean not to, like they didn't mean to, it kind of discluded people of, or women of color and trans women. So
yeah, I think when I was reading that thesis paper, she highlighted a big issue was that Riot Girls often use this umbrella term of gender as like the all being force that they are like fighting against. They used a lot of binary kind of constructions, I guess. Mm-hmm. So they focused on like girl boy, the patriarchy versus woman, like all these things that kind of, it really did erase the issues and experiences of women of color, because it was just kind of just saying like, okay, it's girl versus boy, you know, just like that. And it invisibilizes a lot of other marginalized identities,
like the smaller issues that, like white being, having white privilege, would you say?
I think it was more like they're not leaving any room or space to talk about race or like gender identity as much, instead of just positioning it as girl versus boy.
Right.
They're not really like looking at the nuances.
It's more black and white kind of.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. I feel that even though it's kind of difficult because technically we are like two white presenting people.
I mean, I'm white.
Yeah, I would just say I look white. So it's a bit awkward to talk about topics like
but
this.
They need
but
to be talked
yeah,
about.
Yeah, it's
for
good
sure.
for visibility and everything. But yeah, I feel like having the dominance, I feel like if I was a woman of color and I saw a movement that, even though it tried to go into the punk scene and go like attack at this male dominated field, like that's great. But having it all led by women and have mostly issues that particularly these white middle class women face, I feel like I would be barred if they didn't
yeah.
mention those.
I mean, it kind of does just reflect what white women were facing in the punk scene, like, oh, this is punk music by men made for men. Mm-hmm. And then it just turned out to be like punk music made by white women for white women, and there wasn't really a lot of wiggle room between that.
Yeah.
I know Riot Girls tried to do anti-racist measures as it was part of their philosophy. Like, they tried to hold workshops around unlearning racism. But many white girls were very, like, comfortable in the scene and didn't feel like there was a need to change anything about it, which is kind of, you know, tyranny of the majority. Like, if most people are okay with the circumstances, like, the more marginalized groups will suffer because of that if they're not being acknowledged or heard
right.
in any way. So those kinds of measures weren't super effective.
Yeah. So, like, maintaining the status quo would be kind of inherently...
Yeah,
barring.
It's kind of ironic because that the whole thing is that they're trying to be like against the status quo, but wouldn't really face certain like racist ideologies that they have been conditioned into thinking because of the status quo. Like, you know, I think it's kind of the mindset that some people get. If you're already facing some sort of oppression in any way, like you're gonna be like, oh, like I couldn't really say anything wrong because I understand what it's like to be oppressed, but you really don't in that way. You know?
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, I would say that also diverging a bit from that, I feel like there's also other things that are other factors that deterred people of color, especially black women, from entering Riot Girl. There was always that 1800s trope from TV and media. I feel like it's pretty commonly known as like the angry black woman trope, and so it's labeling black women as unhinged or confrontational, dominant, bitter, abusive. And so I feel like if they were to enter into that Riot Girl scene, they would just get that double label of like, oh, you hate men, and then you're also confrontational and you're unhinged and things. And it's just that intersectionality of two labels that is another deterrent from entering and being in the inclusive, well, to the white woman movement of Riot Girl.
Yeah, I think that is like a very good example of the kind of problem that Riot Girl would not acknowledge, like that mm-hmm. kind of the tropes that or stereotypes that other groups go through that still relate to gender but are also diverge in the sense of race.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like they, I don't think they mean to inherently, but it's just
but how some of them were definitely racist.
Some of them could have
sure.
been, yeah, but mm-hmm. overall, I think they still tried their best, but it was just the way
yeah,
the
I
movement
think,
worked.
Like the leader of Bikini Kill, Kathleen Hanna, was very advocating for anti-racism, but mm-hmm. you know, when there is that when a subculture gets big enough, it still will reflect some aspects of mainstream culture. And I think in a subculture full of white people, like white women or white men, there is still going to be the influence of racism for sure.
Yeah. And I would say also that I feel like this I think I said this before, but this movement wouldn't have been as strong if it was run like led by women of color, because things like, first, another specific example, in the 1990s, there's this label called, or there's this term called girl power. I think we've all heard of it. It was on TV show, or like it was on lunch containers, it was on t-shirts, it was in the media and the radio, and it was coined by Spice Girls, or it's the trend by the Spice Girls, but then it was coined by Bikini Kill first. But it used a lot of these white women as key figures, such as like Pink, Avril Lavigne.
Avril Lavigne.
I cannot pronounce anything today, but and then Gwen Stefani, woman like that. And even though there's still nothing wrong against this, I go girl power. But I don't think that comparing this to the underground movement, like, I feel like the girl power was really more mainstream because it was led by these white women and not women of color. And so same with the Riot Girl movement, like, how popular could have it become if this was led by people like by women of color? So
yeah, I think that they definitely do face a lot more issues trying to get acknowledged for their music, and especially since I think there is also, like, being a woman in punk, first of all, but then also being a black woman in punk is, like, just another, like Corey or like DJ Coco was saying, just an added problem you have to face. But there was, however, even despite all of this, black women and women of color still have a big place in punk today. We're going to play some music like the Linda Lindas. Mm-hmm. We already played Mannequin Pussy and also Skinny Girl Diet. There's, like, if you do some research, there's a lot of bands out there. But if we're going historical more, there were these events called Sista Girl Riots, and they were directly a response to the oversaturation of middle-class white women in the punk and Riot Girl community. And some Riot Girls just left that community completely because of those problems, and they didn't have any other space to express themselves except with each other. So then these Sista Girl Riots were created in the 90s by Tamara Kelly Brown, Simi Stone, Honeychild Coleman, and Maya Sakura. So they kind of had this idea of punk shows made by black women for black women. So it created a community that was even counter to the counterculture.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, it's so cool. Like, they challenged the idea that punk was reserved for white people in any sense, like Riot Girl or mainstream punk.
But the thing is, because I've never heard of that, too, so then I feel like that further implies that.
Yeah, maybe you've never heard of it, but
it is,
I think, of the, like, mainstream media has a lot to do with that, like, how what they deem as important or not important to talk about, or where, like, the most drama is. And this seemed like a really positive thing, which also the mainstream media doesn't love to talk about positive things in general. All I know is that it was very foundational for the current black alternative scene, which is also known as Afropunk, and many of the founding members still participate in it. So
that's good.
It's good to know about.
Good to know that.
But
yeah, overall, Riot Girl, even though the idea made sense and it was great to get women into the punk scene, I feel like it got really polarized by the mass media and it kind of fell apart, because we still hear about some Riot Girl bands today, but they label themselves more as just punk. For example, there's this one specific, I'd say Riot Girl band, but they call themselves a punk band, but they say that they follow Riot Girl inspiration from, like, Bikini Kill and Bratmobile. And they also make their own zines every month and take them out. So I just have a specific example because I think they're pretty cool. I listen to them a lot. They're called Soft Cult. And so we love some Canadian representation on our community radio. So these guys, they're twin sisters from Ontario. So this is Phoenix and Mercedes Armhorn. And they have this EP called See You in the Dark. Pretty good. I really like that one. There's a specific song called Drain. And these, I would say that these are pretty, I think, these are Riot Girl songs, because they touch on issues that the Riot Girl culture does. And so this song kind of touches on human impact on the earth, impacting for climate change. Yeah, and then they also have their monthly zines. It's called Scripture, and they started it about a couple years ago, and really reinforces the messages behind their songs. But not only Soft Cult, but you can also listen to other current Riot Girl bands. There's lots of women of color now, which is great. There's, like, Princess Bree, the Linda Lindas, Upchuck, Hazy and the Scouts, and Pussy Riot, which are some of our favorites, so. Yeah.
And I think we are coming to the end of our program now. We have about 10 minutes left, so I just think we should wrap up our conversation about Riot Girl, like, with some final thoughts.
We're gonna do our final thoughts.
For me, I feel like even though it was, like, the term Riot Girl is very much connected to the time in the 90s, the fact that we still have songs talking about the same issues and repeating the same things, and I know all of these problems that Riot Girls were talking about still fully exist today, with, and especially, like, with the influx of, like, trad wives and Andrew Tate and stuff. Like, we need this so badly.
Yeah.
This autonomous mentality for women, just reclaiming our space and our relationships with other women, and, you know, that is really healing. So that's how I feel. We need Riot Girl still. Maybe an improved version, but yeah.
I definitely agree. It's too bad that the movement kind of went to the direction it did. Not terrible. They weren't inherently racist or inherently trying to do these things, but I believe that we can take inspiration from what they're trying to do, and it's nice to have, like, a more creative outlet to express these thoughts. Kind of like the really heavy metal version of poetry, kind of, is how I think of it. But yeah, anything done by a woman, great. Keep going. So that's all my thoughts.
Anything ever done by a woman, girl bossing to the max.
Oh god. Anyways, I think that's the end of our little wrap up. But we also have Siobhan, who's still listening.
She's been listening into this whole spiel.
She's been here the whole time. But yeah,
you guys did a great job.
Thank you. Thank you.
We appreciate it.
We appreciate you. Okay.
Go women.
Go women.
Go women. That's the moral of the
All
story.
Women. All women. Okay.
Even the terrible woman. It's okay.
Even the terrible. I don't know about that. I don't know about that.
Joking, guys.
Okay. So, yeah, we're at the end of the hour ish, kind of. But we're just going to check out. So the next show is going to be Revolution Rock at 7 p.m. And then we have Bitcoover at 8 p.m. with our music coordinator, Connor. So stick around for that. But yeah, thank you so much for joining us this week. And we're going to do this song. We're going to do Drain by Soft Cult, which is what I kind of talked about. And it touches on climate change. So take a couple listen to the lyrics. But anyway,
bye.
Enjoy.
See you guys next week, Tuesdays at 6 p.m.